Fanboy Smackdown, Episode 55, Stephen King's The Mist.
Hey, this is Tony.
And this is Adam.
And this is Fanboy Smackdown.
Episode 55.
Yes. We're going to talk about Stephen King's The Mist.
No, we're going to talk about Stephen King's The Mist, the movie.
Yes, the
and
movie.
And I'm going to try and separate the two, but you know what? I already feel it's coming.
Well, you'll have to help me there because I have not read the short story.
Okay.
So you'll have to fill in the gaps there when the time is appropriate. Before we get into that, mm-hmm. we do have the matter of a contest that is just wrapped up. And we haven't actually picked the winner yet. I just thought of that.
So we should probably, be right back!
So we should probably do the click, click, click thing and figure out exactly how many contestants we had. I know there were not many. There were not as many for this contest. Hopefully there will be a few more for the next one, though after this episode, perhaps not. We'll see. We will see. Actually, there are two DVDs we're going to be giving away. Whenever. We've got them. Mm-hmm. We can give them away whenever we want. First, though, we've got Highlander the Source to give away, and you'll hear my click, click, clicking as I check and see exactly how many email we have in regards to the contest. And then we're going to need to...
Randomly select
one of the number of participants. And then from there, we will send the information off to the...
publishing company.
Yep, and they will send it out.
Mm-hmm.
And if I am not mistaken, we are giving away, for this, we're actually giving away more than just a DVD. We're giving away
like
poster and soundtrack.
Ooh.
Yeah. So that's kind of cool. I mean, it's not just the movie. The movie that...
I gotta be honest with you, I didn't watch it.
I did.
It's sitting on my coffee table.
I did. You didn't miss much. I saw
Adrian Paul in the front, and I was like, ooh.
I shouldn't just make a flat-out statement like that. My thing is I have watched Highlander
mm-hmm.
and Highlander 2,
mm-hmm.
and Highlander 2 barely rates on the should-have-been-made scale. And beyond that, I think I've watched like 5 minutes of the whole Highlander series as I passed through
Lena
flipping channels.
The entire first season of it, and I'm like, how do you live with yourself after you watch this?
Yeah.
Just terrible.
Yeah, I never got into it, and that series it apparently plays really well into this movie. I mean, it's mm-hmm. it's a big part of what this movie's about. So that said, it was really tough to go anywhere with it for me because I hadn't seen any of it. You know, I had no connection to the characters. I had no connection to any of the side characters who apparently must have played some role in the series, but I had no clue. So I was really kind of lost in that respect. From what I hear, though, this is part one of a trilogy.
Oh,
wow. Nice. Actually, we've got three names. So I don't even know how to do this at this point.
Dice.
I don't have any.
I'm going to pick this up, and the first number I see, that's a 1, 2, or 3. It's a 1.
1. All right. Ed from Indianapolis.
Oh.
Which I believe...
I believe we know this guy.
Ed is going to be getting all this information sent out. We're going to send this out and send Ed an email and forward this on to the advertising company, and hopefully we'll be sending that out to him very shortly.
Congrats, Ed.
Now, as far as some other contests we have coming up, we'll post all the information on the website as far as figuring out the time and all that. It's because we haven't worked out the details yet, so...
Yeah, it's been sitting on my table of things to do for, like, 2 weeks, so maybe I'll do that this week.
Well, we've got that, plus we've got the two DVDs that I've got.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the two new DVDs that we've got to give away. I can tell you at this point what those DVDs are. I'm not sure how we're going to do the contest yet, mm-hmm. but check the website. Check fanboysmackdown.com/contests, or contest, I don't remember now. Contests, I think. I think it's plural. Anyway, if you go to the front page on the left-hand side, there's a link to it. You'll find it's pretty easy. And we'll probably post something mm-hmm. in the blog section of the site as the contests go live. The two movies that we are giving away at some point, probably through the month of April, are Stephen King's The Mist on DVD, two-disc DVD set. Some of the special features actually look kind of interesting. And, you know, I'm almost curious to rewatch this movie in the black and white because I think some of my problems with the special effects might go away in black and white. I don't know. I'll have to see it.
All right.
I'll give it a shot. I'll actually give it a shot in black and white and see, because apparently that's what Frank Darabont wanted to do, at least according to the promotional information on the disc. Apparently his vision was to do it in black and white.
Okay. Well, so, I'll talk about that when we get to the
end. Yeah, we'll get to that.
What's
in a few
the
minutes.
Second DVD?
Automaton Transfusion, I think it is. Yes. This is a zombie movie that... Okay, I couldn't even leave the disc laying on the kitchen table because the cover of it, I was afraid of the therapy that I'd have to pay for if my 5-year-old got a hold of the cover of this thing. It's this movie is being distributed by now there's Dimension Pictures, which is it's a pretty well known movie distribution movie studio. This is Dimension Extreme, so yeah. Haven't seen it yet. I can't really speak to the content of the film, but we've got a copy that we're going to be taking a look at some point. And
Melina watched it.
Did she?
Yes.
Did she? Did she have any comments about it? Or
it was very bloody.
All right.
Very violent.
Maybe we should get her to record a little piece and
a little blurb.
Yeah, we can throw that into an episode. So we've got that to give away, and yeah, I'm sure we'll talk about it at some point because we have a copy to review, and we've got a copy that we're giving away. So we've got those probably at some point through the month of April. We'll be doing those. Now that we got all that crap out of the way, anything going on with you, man?
Not really. Not yet.
Not really. I got jury duty this week. That kind of sucks.
That really does suck.
You know, it's as bad as it is just being off my regular schedule. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting process. The judge is super cool. I mean, we had one of the jurors say, you know, they've actually got a room we go into and they've got treats and soda and water and everything for us that we can just have. Mm-hmm. And somebody said, you know, these treats are nice, but, you know, could we have something healthy? Could you maybe see about getting somebody to bring in some fruit? We came in today. Apples, oranges, bananas, strawberries, blueberries, grapes, pineapple.
It's a mighty good spread.
Yes, it was. And hopefully it's going to last a couple more days. I'm looking forward to digging into more of it tomorrow. So, I mean, all in all, it sucks that I'm off my regular routine. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting. And, you know, I suppose I could have tried to fudge my way out of, you know, getting out of it.
You hate minority supplied here, and you can't.
Something
like cases.
Yeah, well, I haven't really talked about it. So after it's all said and done, I'll give you some more details. But basically, there were probably things I could have said that would have gotten me out of it. Mm-hmm. At that point, I also know that there's a guy currently sitting on the jury that tried everything
to get
out of it. It was so obvious. It was so obvious that he tried every possible excuse to get off, that's probably specifically why they kept him. So
I hate the young. I hate the old. I hate everyone.
Well, good. Then you're an equal opportunity hatist. So that's what I've got going on this week. Long time ago, I got sued for a car accident I was in. Mm-hmm. The jury found in favor of me, so I have no problem with juries. I'm actually kind of appreciative toward them. So,
that's funny.
Yeah. So, anyway, the movie. I literally just moments ago finished watching it.
I know you subjected me to the end.
To the end of the film. You know, you never did tell me what you thought of the film, and I could tell that you didn't tell me on purpose.
You're right.
And I could tell just by the way you talked about and avoided telling me. You probably had some pretty strong feelings about the movie because you have said that this is one of your favorite short stories, or
yes.
Possibly your favorite short story.
This is my favorite
Stephen King?
Short story from Stephen King.
Okay.
When I was younger, my dad really got me into Stephen King. Mm-hmm. Like, he would tell bedtime stories that were his short stories. That, no joke.
Wow.
And he told me The Mist, and then I read The Mist, and he one of the lines in The Mist is when Actually, I can't tell that story yet.
Okay. Okay.
There's one line in The Mist that when we get to the spoiler section, I'll tell you what it is.
Okay.
That he said is the scariest line Stephen King has ever written. Wow. And when I read through the book, read through the story, I was like, you know what? You're right. That was the creepiest line in the entire thing. And it's not, the line isn't true anymore in the movie. So that really killed it for me. It's probably pretty apparent that I am a raving Stephen King fanboy. And I know that his, you have to kind of have a little bit of leeway for his movies because the movies are usually terrible.
Yeah.
So
that's true of everything past about the second or third Stephen King movie that was made.
Yes.
Because some of the early ones were actually fairly true to the books.
Yes.
Some of his more mainstream, and some of them ventured almost like into sci-fi territory. Mm-hmm. They weren't quite as supernatural as they were more modern fantasy sci-fi. Firestarter, Dead Zone.
Yeah, those movies weren't bad.
I like those movies. And in fact, I've read some of those Stephen King books. And actually, I started reading Stephen King with the books that were made from the movies that I was familiar with. Mm-hmm. I started reading those books and actually enjoyed those. Then I started reading some of the other Stephen King books. And I'm not really, honestly, a fan.
As long as you say you didn't read Dark Tower and you have no opinions on it, we're good.
I have not read Dark Tower. Excellent. I have no opinions on it.
Excellent.
I can't formulate an opinion on that one. Being that Stephen King is considered like the modern master of horror, I can probably honestly say that I'm not a fan of written horror fiction.
Yeah, neither am I. And I don't really even consider him. This may be just a hallmark of my generation, but I don't really consider his writing horror. A lot of my favorite novels from him are like fantasy novels, his fantasy work, like Eyes of the Dragon.
Oh.
What?
Oh.
What?
Oh.
That was incredible.
That was painful.
No, that was awesome.
I was reading a lot of high fantasy when I read that book, and that book seemed like the worst of all cliches to me.
Oh. But it was so good.
Oh. No.
That was the first Stephen King book I ever read.
Had you read any high fantasy?
No.
That could be it.
That was the biggest novel I had ever read. I wouldn't remember that. It was like 8 or 7. But.
Yeah, I read it when it came out. I read it like when it came out, so I was in my teens, probably 20s.
Yeah, but it's a children's fantasy, so it's...
It is, and I had been reading a lot of high fantasy at the time, so that book, looking back on it, that book is full of fantasy cliche.
Yes.
It really is. And looking back on it, they marketed it as fantasy. I'd have to reread it, but just from my memory of it, I have to say it's almost more fairy tale than it is.
Yeah, you know, I totally agree with that.
And so I think for me it was mismarketed as a fantasy novel, and it really wasn't anything groundbreaking, so.
Right.
So I was really disappointed in it.
I think a lot of his work is mismarketed because he's the master of horror. The new horror from Stephen King.
Right.
Most of the stuff isn't even horror.
No.
It's not even close.
No. I think my problem with his writing in the fiction, in the prose, has always been the aspect of horror that don't really get interested in the characters. Because they're probably going to be gone. You know, and very quickly in the story. I mean, I can't remember the story I was reading, but I remember reading one story and read about one character for 20 minutes, or for probably about 20 pages, and then the character's dead.
Yeah.
And
Stephen King is not afraid to kill people.
And I don't mind that he's not afraid to kill people, but don't invest my time with that character without making any other connections to any other characters that you've introduced yet. Because he hadn't really introduced any other characters. And I can't remember which one it was, but it was a solitary character. And they were just doing something, and then they got killed while they were doing it. So they didn't interact with anybody else. Mm-hmm. They didn't, you know, there was no
other bearing on
other characters involved in the story. Now, eventually the person ended up coming up later in the book. But it was like, I just didn't even care by that
you
point.
You worked so hard to get there,
It's like, why are you going to... I mean, for me, it felt cheap. Because you created a character, but you didn't take time to develop the character.
Right, but then you just used him later.
Yeah. And so for me, it was... You know, and this was at the time when I was kind of learning the craft of writing, and I was trying to, you know, learn how to create characters and do that kind of thing. And it was really disappointing to me because I had been, you know, everybody had been saying Stephen King is so great at, right. at characters. And I find that true, but for me, his horror stuff is harder to get into.
Yeah, I can see that.
But, I mean, I have read The Dead Zone and Christine and okay. Firestarter right. and That's Carrie. And
those are all novels. Have you read his short stories?
No. I honestly cannot say I have.
His short stories are incredible.
Yeah. Short stories are a completely different animal than novels.
Yes, they are.
A lot of what I have written have been short stories. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of writers who have a very hard time writing short stories.
Yes,
they have a hard time getting down that mm-hmm. concisely and that short.
Well, The Mist is actually a short story.
I can see that. I can see that from the content of the film.
So, Shawshank Redemption.
I knew that was a short story.
I mean, you kind of get
I'm surprised at how that one is.
Where it's kind of pedantic, though, because like the short story is about 200 pages long.
So. Yeah, so it's probably more like novella.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's there's a point of contention. Because sure. You could probably just pull it out into its own book. But.
Right. Well, and some of his first couple novels aren't that long.
Right.
You know, especially like The Firestarters mm-hmm. and Dead Zone and those kind of... They're not really that long.
No. I'll bring you out one of the compilation books that he okay. has of short stories. There are ones that are obviously better than others, but the ones that are really good are really good.
Yeah. And I know he's got quite a few compilations mm-hmm. of short stories, but we've gone way off into left field. And we're coming back.
This is my Stephen King fanboyism.
That's all right. Boom. That's all right.
Okay.
So, The Mist. written by Stephen King as mm-hmm. a short story, directed by Frank Darabont.
Yes.
This is their third collaboration.
Mm-hmm. Shawshank is on there and...
Green Mile. Which...
Shawshank and Green Mile, I thought were both good. Actually, I think yes. Shawshank is the best movie ever made, so...
I think it's a great movie. I it's still not my favorite, mm-hmm. but it's way up there. It is a great movie. Green Mile, I have some problems with... The movie and the story.
Yeah, serialization really didn't...
The serialization well. Didn't help.
No.
Because it was something different and because it was serialization, mm-hmm. I tried it. I read it.
Did you read it as it came out?
I read it as it came out.
Yeah.
At the month after month after month, which it was interesting because there were a couple of little problems with it. And I can't remember now. It's been so long since mm-hmm. I read it because I read it literally... when it came out, however right. many years ago that was.
10 years ago.
Something like that. It was okay. I mean, I could kind of see where a lot of it was going. It by the nature of what he was doing, it kind of projected itself a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it felt like he had to build cliffhangers into it.
Because it was serialized.
Which, I don't have a problem with that because I've read comic books for so long.
Right.
That you have the natural cliffhanger of every issue.
Mm-hmm.
But there were still some moments where you could tell that the story wasn't finished.
Mm-hmm.
He was writing it as it was being serialized, and when he's writing like chapter 4, they're printing chapter 1, so he's not done with the story yet, and it's not like he could have gone back and fixed it.
Right.
Which is, I mean, that's the nature of serialization. You have to be careful that. You're not falling over yourself, and you're not making a mistake
mm-hmm.
in chapter one that
right,
you can't recover from.
Retcon, yeah.
John Saul did the same thing right about the same time. He and Stephen King were comparable at the time, and he was trying to like almost mimic some mm-hmm. of the stuff Stephen King was doing. He did a serialized novel, like I think within like a year after King did the Green Mile. And I remember reading that, and it was actually, the concept lent itself a lot more to serialization than The Green Mile did. The Green Mile was a novel in 6 parts.
Yeah, I don't even know why he serialized it.
It didn't lend itself to serialization. This one kind of did, because he actually made it more of an anthology piece, where it was all set in the same town,
mm-hmm.
it all surrounded like this asylum, and it kind of pieced together. Unfortunately, there were pieces that seemed important in the first couple of books that it ended up not having any bearing later on. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was stuff that could have gone really creepy and really dark, like parents making the little boy dress up as a little girl because they wanted a daughter. And I mean, they had stuff that kind of bordered on that, but it never really bit. And it never really took that leap of doing it. You know, it
was, had the Stephen King ability to pull the trigger.
Yeah, he didn't have the guts to pull the trigger. It really was the way it came off. Stephen King doesn't have that problem.
No.
And
although Stephen King has a different problem of every one of his stories since he got hit by that van has been about a van in some way, shape, or form.
Really? I'm not familiar enough with his work after that, but
that's a gross generalization, but it's pretty much true.
You know, sometimes that happens. I've read a lot of Dean Koontz, and there's a lot of preternatural things in Dean Koontz novels. He loves that word. So this is their third collaboration, mm-hmm. as far as that goes. And in fact, in this one, there's actually a reference to the very beginning of the movie. There's a reference to the Gunslinger.
Oh, yeah. Okay, all right. I didn't know what you're talking. I thought you were referencing one of the other movies.
No. This one in the mist.
I tell you what, the first 30 seconds of the movie, when they pan behind him and you see that picture, I saw like maybe 1/100th of the picture. I'm like, oh my god, I know what that is. I know what it is. And you know what? In the movie, they make him a movie poster painter or whatever. He paints movie posters. Mm-hmm. He's the guy who designs them.
Yep.
I want the implication to be that the Dark Tower movie is in production. That's what I want the implication to be.
Yeah, in that universe.
That's what I want it to be.
And I, you know what? I can buy that.
J.J. Abrams bought the rights to the movie for $19.
Yep.
I don't think he's actually going to make it, though, which is fine.
J.J. Abrams is going to have to start doing something worthwhile soon.
Yes.
I have not seen Cloverfield, but I've seen enough about it to know that I'm not really all that interested in seeing it.
I'm not really interested in seeing it. I enjoy Lost.
And from everything I've heard about the new Star Trek movie,
mm-hmm.
I'm concerned.
I'm not.
I'm not a Trek fan as far as the TV shows go, but I have enjoyed a lot of the movies.
Mm-hmm. I'm a Trek fan.
This one's interesting, but
I don't like TOS, so
I cannot disagree with that. I thought TOS
was friggin' terrible. Because Kirk was, like, the most worthless character of all time. Because whatever he wanted to do, it always worked out perfect for him. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
There's no conflict that Kirk can't solve by just punching an alien in the face.
Yeah. Yeah, and
or sleeping with some green chick.
I have a problem with Roddenberry's contention that the crew members could never have conflict amongst each other.
Yes.
Which, if you look at TOS, that's completely true. And if you look at even TNG, that is true. Until Gene Roddenberry dies,
mm-hmm.
in real life, and then all of a sudden there's conflict between crew members. As far as I'm concerned, it was, you know, it was an unfortunate event that someone died, but
it was great for the show.
It was great for the show. It was great for the license,
mm-hmm.
for Paramount. 'Cause, yes. I mean, it really opened up a lot more storytelling avenues for them. So anyway,
The Mist.
It's like we don't want to talk about it.
All right,
we keep pushing away from it.
Let me line out my general impressions, because I actually do have general impressions.
All right,
I hate the movie. I did actually enjoy the movie. For maybe 90% of the movie, I enjoyed.
Yeah.
I thought the acting was okay. There were some people who are really good. The
yes.
crazy preacher chick.
Yes.
You wanted to kill her. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was great.
Yeah, she did a great job.
I don't remember what her name is or who she is.
There's a lot of the characters, a lot of the actors did a really good job.
I thought the kid was pretty useless, but
the kid was mostly useless, but they really didn't do a lot with him.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot there for him. Mm-hmm. He was there. He was scenery. He was a prop.
Yeah, more than he was Tom Jane's prop. He's like, yeah. Oh, crap, I can't do anything wild because I got a kid.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Tom Jane was...
He was all right.
All right. I mean...
I'll have more to say about Tom Jane when we get to the spoiler section.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was almost like, this is Tom Jane at some point when he made The Punisher. I mean, it almost felt like kind of the same character.
Yes.
In some ways that, you know...
He was Frank Castle Part 2.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like... It was almost like Frank Castle Light.
Yes, because he wasn't killing as many people.
Yeah, but he wanted to. He seemed like he wanted to kill people. He seemed like he wanted to. If he had bigger guns, he probably would have.
Probably, but there was only like one gun in the movie.
Yeah.
That was not enough for Tom Jane to go
to
Kingsbury.
No.
I know that you had problems with the
creatures. The special effects.
Yeah.
You know, what's weird is I had problems with random parts of the special effects. Mm-hmm. Some of the creatures were actually looked really cool and were convincingly creepy.
Right.
The tentacle creature at the beginning, like one of the first creatures we see, it kind of looked like an octopus.
Right.
That's the impression, at least when you first see it, is that it's an octopus or something along those lines. It just, the special effects, it was obviously CGI.
Yes.
And not
bad CGI.
And it was bad CGI. And it kind of left me with the impression of, oh man, what am I in for? Considering this is the first real
thing that you see.
Thing that you're seeing, and it just wasn't well done.
No, it wasn't well. It wasn't well done
at first. At first, it wasn't well done. When they really started interacting with it, it was better.
Right.
It was like,
which is weird because
when the motion was really fluid, it looked bad.
Yes.
from a distance, it looked bad. When they got really close up on it, when it was actually hitting people and grabbing people
and doing all that
and
stuff.
Morphing and doing the different things that it did, that looked good. I had no problem with it then. But my first impression of it wasn't good.
Yeah, the CGI was hit or miss. I think a lot of kind of a boon for the CGI was that most of the things were in the mist. That helped it a lot.
Yeah.
They kind of faded it back, and then that was fine with me.
Right.
It's like, well, I can't really see it, which is fine because it's in the mist. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, and I think they could have actually, and I'm curious, I haven't seen any of the special features or anything, I'm curious if some of that stuff wasn't done with practical effects, if they weren't real things on some of those. Because it looked
back
like
in there.
Yeah, just back in the mist. It seemed like they could have very easily done certain creatures in the mist as actual
things.
You know, men in rubber suit kind of things. I mean, not literally men in rubber suits, but, you know, actual mechanical or, you know, some kind of physical prop to it. I don't know that they did. And it probably did. I think you're right. It probably did save them on the CGI, being that a lot of it was in the mist.
Right.
And now that I think about it, the times that I had the most problems with the creatures is when they were inside, when they came into the building, and they weren't in the mist. So that could be it. That could be the difference. Now that said, one of the things that I think I mentioned earlier about the DVD is that Frank Darabont
wanted to do it
black and white. I'm curious.
I'm sure that it probably
if it would have looked better
good in black and white.
Yeah.
Just because it's not, I don't know.
I'm half tempted to get up and pop the DVD now and look. Yeah, because I wasn't 100% convinced with that. Not that that's a problem. I mean, I don't have a problem with cheap effects, but that the first time I saw it, it didn't look great, but later it did. That kind of that was a little disconcerting. It was almost like if it's going to look bad after I'm impressed by it.
Yeah, exactly.
So I can forgive it. Yeah, impress me with it, then it's okay if it doesn't look so great. I think it's one of the problems that suffered for the Hulk in the first Hulk movie, because the commercials that everybody saw, and the first time you see the Hulk, like in the advertising and things like that, you saw the Hulk. You saw it after you'd seen it. Now, in the movie, it was introduced a lot more subtly. It was more in shadow. You only saw bits and pieces of it. So that when you finally saw the Hulk, you had already bought into it. I mean, at least for me, I was already into it. They also had, and I really never went back and looked, but there was, supposedly there was a difference in that some of the advertising, some of the photos that were leaked were not fully rendered. So they were still jaggy and looked CGI. When I saw the movie in theaters, I did not have one problem at all with the Hulk. I thought it was well done as far as the CGI work and stuff.
All right, good.
I actually don't have a problem with the movie, but it's a monster movie.
All right, well, the Hulk for another day.
Yes.
I guess we can basically kind of do a little short synopsis of the story.
there's not much to it.
Yeah.
The story is this guy goes to town and there's a mist.
Yes.
And, I mean, really, that's about it. This movie has about as much of a plot and as much of a story synopsis as, and this is where I think it would have actually served it really well, mm-hmm. is if it was an episode of The Twilight Zone. This movie felt like an episode of Twilight Zone to me.
Yes.
Like the old 50s Twilight Zone, mm-hmm. except bloody.
Yes.
I mean, there was gore. Agree with there was gore and there was blood, mm-hmm. and even the end of the movie and the problems that I have with it, I think it just felt so much like a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that comes from the fact that it is a short story.
Uh-huh.
That the mist in the book is not the point of the book. Mm-hmm. In fact, if I were to tell you about the book, the mist, I would mention the mist, but I would spend a lot more time mentioning the desperation of people under a stressful situation.
And that's what it should have been.
Yes.
That's what would have made it a Twilight Zone episode, mm-hmm. more. They would have cut out a lot more of the action sequences with, yes. the critters.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been, you could probably take that movie. I mean, with the rudimentary editing skills that I have, I could probably literally take that movie, edit it down to a 45-minute, mm-hmm. Twilight Zone episode, and probably be a really good Twilight, yes, Zone episode.
Because it was a character-driven story,
yeah.
But the plot, it was not a character-driven movie. It was a plot-driven movie.
Right.
And it was like...
You could have all those action sequences take place in the commercial breaks.
Mm-hmm.
Off scene, you'd know, you know, so-and-so didn't make it back, yeah. alive.
Okay.
You know, and have somebody come back blood splattered, and they're like, oh, whatever happened, it's bad.
Yeah, and it's like, they made it into a plot-driven movie, but there's no plot to the mist.
No.
There's no plot to the mist. Yeah. There's nowhere to go with it.
As far as a review for the movie goes, as far as recommendations for this movie, I think if you're a fan of horror movies in general, I think it actually lends itself a little more to an older style horror movie,
mm-hmm.
but with a little more gore. Not as much.
It's not a slasher.
It's not a slasher flick, but there's things that are disconcerting when you see
them. Yes, there is enough violence and gore to put it into that category.
Yes.
It kind of waffles between horror and action, really.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's.
It's hard to describe.
It's hard to describe, and it's kind of like how Aliens, mm-hmm. was a sci-fi action movie with some horror elements.
Right.
This movie was kind of like the reverse. It wanted to be a horror movie, but it also struggled for action sequences.
Yes.
And it kind of had both those elements of the action and the horror, but didn't do either one of them as successfully as,
no.
like... the first Alien movie did.
No, because the first Alien movie was good.
Oh, that's a phenomenal flick. Okay. As far as that goes, though, it's interesting. The ending, I think the box is one of the most shocking endings in recent history or something like that.
Okay.
We'll talk about that,
yeah.
after the break.
I think that if you are a fan of the short story, you should see the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But be prepared to be pissed. I saw the movie with my dad, who is, of course,
yeah.
a fan, and he was like, dude, what did you bring me to? And I was like, you brought me.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you don't get all that invested in it,
right.
you'll probably enjoy it. And considering I knew that it was a Stephen King short story, and... I knew at least you and a few other people really enjoyed the short story. I think I gave it more credit,
mm-hmm.
than it ended up paying me back in the end.
Yes.
And in that way, I was disappointed. I think if I wouldn't have had that bias going into it, I probably would have enjoyed it more,
mm-hmm.
and probably wouldn't have been as disappointed by the ending. As it was, I thought the ending felt really cliche to me.
Yes.
And
I totally agree.
And so, that said, it is definitely rated R. There are good reasons it's rated, yes. R. Yeah, this isn't one
This is not for the kids.
Not for the squeamish.
No.
At all. But at the same time, just enjoy it as a horror movie. You know, if you like a slasher flick, you're probably going to enjoy this fine enough.
Probably.
You know, I would rate it as about on the same level as a slasher flick, though it's not the same as one. And really the only way I can say anything more than that is, if you dig slasher flicks, check it out and go from there.
I don't disagree with that.
So, let's...
I'm so anxious to get to the spoilers section.
Let's take a break and we'll get to the spoilers and talk about the rest.
Hi, my name is Trampas Whiteman, and this is my review of Tin Man. Tin Man is a Sci-Fi Channel miniseries that completely reimagines The Wizard of Oz. No longer is this a children's story. This is a tale given new life and new meaning. No longer is this the wonderful world of Oz. Welcome to the world of the Outer Zone. Tin Man takes each character and turns them on their head. DG is the modern-day Dorothy, a young woman who works in a diner and soon finds herself in the OZ, a realm of magical power, strange creatures, and darkness. There, as in The Wizard of Oz, she meets three companions. The first of these is the new Scarecrow, now named Glitch. Glitch was once a master inventor and aide to the Queen. When he crossed paths with the evil witch, Azcadelia, half of his brain was removed. Now, the top of his head has a zipper, which I find to be a nifty visual. Kind of creepy, too. The Tin Man himself is a man named Kane. Once a cop, known in these realms as Tin Men, he was forced by Azcadelia's soldiers to live in a metal suit and watch a holographic loop of his wife and child being abducted by her soldiers over and over again. Kane becomes DG's guardian and protector in Tin Man and comes across in sort of a cowboy fashion. Certainly, this was the most surprising of all the reimagined characters, and the most pleasing. The third of DG's companions is Ra, one of the race of half-men, half-wolverines, according to sci-fi.com, and Tin Man's version of the Cowardly Lion. Ra's race is empathic by nature, giving them a certain amount of telepathic powers and insight. Ra has to battle his shattered nerves while trying to regain the gift of second sight. Personally, I found Ra to be the weakest of the reimagined characters. While the performance wasn't bad, I felt that it could have been a bit more. Never fear, for Toto makes an appearance as well, and not in the form you might expect. Man's best friend indeed. The story of Dorothy would never be complete without the Wicked Witch, a role filled by the sorceress Azcadelia. This time, the witch is a beautiful woman with terrifying powers. Azcadelia proves to be a powerful nemesis for DG, and one who is not two-dimensional. The dark secrets and revelations in this story will change the way you look at the Wicked Witch forever. My only criticism of Azcadelia is centered around the summoning of her flying monkeys, who emerge from tattoos on her upper chest. It almost seems like a cheap way of focusing on Azcadelia's attributes. The world itself has sort of a steampunk feel, where technology is archaic-looking, yet it is also one that produces such things as holograms. It's a dichotomy, to be sure, yet I found the difference in technology was not terribly distracting. The 30 to 50-ish style cars were perhaps a bit much, but they can be overlooked. What surprises me the most is the quality of the writing. This is a solid story, one that is fresh and new, yet one that pays homage to the original movie and story. This was a classy move on the part of the creators. Tin Man is further proof that sci-fi does miniseries rather well. It was a great production, and one that I found quite entertaining. Something old is something new again, and I find myself hungering for more. I hope the execs at the Sci-Fi Channel will consider making this into a series, one that perhaps draws inspiration from L. Frank Baum's other Oz stories, yet one that isn't afraid to go in its own direction. I give Tin Man a solid 4.5 out of 5 stars. Look for it soon on Amazon.com.
Okay, and we're back.
And excellent. It's spoiler time.
Spoilery.
Because I'm about to unleash.
All right. So.
That ending was so goddamn painful. I wanted to kill myself.
You know.
Did we learn nothing from Star Wars 3? Whenever some guy does something terrible and finds out about it at the end of the movie, just repeatedly yelling, "No!" is not the way to go. That does not win. That fails. You've lost.
Okay.
What the... hell was going on with that?
I'm getting to the end of the movie, and they leave.
Let me
take it back, because here's the thought process that I'm going through watching this movie.
Okay.
Having not read the short story, having no concept of what the short story is about.
If you haven't read the short story, I'm going to ruin it for you right now.
That's fine. That's fine. But, okay, they're all still in the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the conflict. And the psycho crazy preacher woman
gets shot.
Mm-hmm. Okay, which is, yay, she's dead.
That's fine. I was good with that. That was great.
That was actually a quite uplifting moment, as weird as it was.
She was crazy. She did a really good job.
Yeah.
I was fine with that. Great turning point in the story.
So they leave.
Short story ends.
And that, you know what? Awesome.
Yes. They get in the Jeep. He closes the door. He turns it on. He starts to drive. Short story ends.
Fine.
Yes. Yes.
Fine.
Totally agree.
If they would have ran out of gas and counted that there were four bullets and the short story ended, I would have been fine with it. If the movie would have ended there, I would have been fine with it. They just keep taking it one step farther.
It's
the
like,
ending is about, I mean, the ending, the way they were leading it, it seemed like it was going to be about hope.
Yes.
They were leading you that way. It was very dark and very dreary and very painful. Everything they were going along with, it was very desolate.
Mm-hmm.
They were full of despair.
Yep, and then they were kept going down that long path.
Yeah,
you expected at the end of the path there to be something.
Anything.
Yeah.
but there was just one answer. An answer to what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
An alien invasion.
Yes.
The mother of all monsters. Which they did deliver that. And
came out of nowhere.
Walked
across the street.
In the Whiskey Tango Foxtrot moment of the movie.
What are you doing?
It was like this giant dinosaur bug.
Yeah. What?
Because it had six legs, so it was an insect.
Mm.
And it had
wingy
something.
Tentacle things.
Oh, man. Okay. They're driving.
Mm-hmm.
And at the point in this movie, I'm like, how far have they driven and why do they still have gas? And then they run out of gas. So I'm like, hey, somebody's thinking.
Right.
You know, it's like, all right, they're out of gas. Now they're out of gas. There's only five of them in the car. Despair is really set in.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing they really could have done at that point to make it better was to make it obviously nighttime.
Yes.
Because...
or more obviously made bug creatures around the Jeep.
Yes.
Because it's like they just kind of vaguely heard them off in the distance, and it was like, they may be out there, or maybe not, but we can't really determine that, so
and
let's just shoot ourselves in the head.
You know, this movie felt so much like an old sci-fi movie, an old horror movie, that you almost expected that moment where they're locked up in the house, or they're locked up in the mall, or whatever, and they open the door, and it's like the Valley of when the spiders came, they open the door, and the whole town is covered in cobwebs.
Right.
You know, those old 50s movies where you'd always have that moment where they walk out and there's, like, birds everywhere.
Right. The shocking moment.
Yeah, that moment. And the movie ends there. And it's like, ooh, what happened?
Yeah.
No.
No, they didn't even leave it to your imagination.
They left nothing to the imagination. And it was unfortunate. They had a lot of moments to make the ending really good.
Yes.
They could have left the ending of the movie is they're looking around and they said, there's five of us.
And there's four bullets.
And there's four bullets.
Right. Movie ends.
And he says, I'll figure something out.
Mm-hmm. I'm fine with that.
End the movie. Because at that point, does it mean I've got four monsters that I can kill?
Yeah. Or I'm going to kill you
four. Or I'm going to kill you four. Or I'm going to reach back and strangle the old lady because she looks like I could snap her neck really quick. At which point I'm thinking, because she has this look on her face like, well, honey, you can kill me first. That's fine.
Yeah.
she has that look on her face. It's like, if it's any easier, sweetie, you can just kill me first. You can use your bare hands. You're a big, strong guy.
Oh, man. The line from the book. The line from the
book. All right. Save me.
As he's pulling away from their house at the beginning, before everything happens, he gets in the Jeep with his son, and he's pulling away. And his wife is standing on the stoop, and she's waving to him.
Uh-huh.
And he says, blah, 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 she looks so beautiful. But that would be the last time I would ever see her. And then end. And then it just goes on and doesn't say anything else about it.
Because in the we know that he saw her again.
Yes, yes. I was like, what are you doing? And then he goes back and I was like, no, come on, no. It was just I was sitting next to my dad the entire movie. They get into the Jeep, I'm like, all right, let's end. And I know they're not gonna end the movie. And then they keep going, and I'm like, oh, here we go. And then he goes back, and I'm like, no, okay, well, end here. End here. I'm fine with ending here.
Mm-hmm.
And then they keep going. It's like, no, you're trying to one-up yourself on something stupid.
You know, if they would have just ended the movie at the point where they counted the bullets, I would have been so much happier. Because the movie really, the story really did become about the desolation and despair when they're driving.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's where you really got the sense of it.
Right.
Because they were alone, and they're driving, and there's dead cars with dead bodies, and I mean, you really get the sense of the oh shit.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and that was the whole point of the book. The whole point of the book had nothing to do with the Mist.
Yeah,
the Mist was just that backdrop, and it was a totally character-driven story. And then the conflict is resolved when the characters come to the resolution that the bitch chick must die.
Yeah.
And then they kill her on the way out.
Mm-hmm.
And then they leave the store, which is, I guess, the climax of the book. But the bitch chick is dead, which is the actual resolution.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the story is just them leaving.
Right, right. So,
I mean,
to finish the spoilering and the bitching about the ending of the movie, he kills them. He kills the other four mm-hmm. in the car.
His son, obviously. That blonde chick, and those two old people.
Artistically done, mind you. I liked the effect of them panning back into the Mist and seeing the gunshot flash through the car. I actually did like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has the Anakin Skywalker moment.
That was terrible.
Putting the gun in his mouth, trying to shoot when he knows there are no bullets.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, you know what's coming.
Yes.
I mean, you know that painful. Something is going to happen, and everything's going to be all right.
Every
second. Now that it's 30 seconds after he's
every second killed between them all. The last gunshot, and then when the army people roll through, it's like, oh, it gets worse.
The only thing, the only saving grace it would have had at that moment is as that tank rolled through, is if he would have dove headfirst in front of the treads, and his head would have went.
Yeah, that would have been good.
I mean, other than that, I mean, the ending was just so terrible. It was weak. It was so weak.
It was such a cop-out.
It was.
It's like, well, we don't want to resolve this in a manner where you would either have to think about it, or where we don't tell you what the ending is. It was just weak. I can't even really put my finger on why it was so weak.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of my angst towards this is because I was so invested in the story, but come on.
It gave you a reason to be invested in it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't just a cheap slasher flick.
Right.
The only reason I think I recommended it as a cheap slasher flick was because of the ending. If the ending was stronger,
mm-hmm.
less of it.
I did like the music for the ending, though.
Yeah.
I like that loud, waily...
Whatever.
Classical music.
What? Yeah. That was the editor of the movie throwing that in there, audibly complaining about having to edit this crap into the movie.
I'm not really sure why all movies have to have that loud wailing music now, but it's a trend I actually like, yeah. So I'm fine with it.
So, yeah, I mean,
there's not even a whole lot to say about it. It's just
I'll have to go back and check the scene breaks in this,
mm-hmm.
and I think that if I watch the movie again, I'll just end it right before the last scene starts.
Yeah. That's what I did with Star Wars 2.
Yeah.
Every scene with Anakin and Amidala, you just skip to the next chapter.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Because of Obi-Wan's big balls.
I still haven't seen that. I have to do that sometime.
Obi-Wan goes on his own mystery chase and he's kicking ass. Then the movie ends.
That half of the movie is really good.
I know. It's all fantastic.
It's really good.
It really recaptures the old Star Wars. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, George Lucas always needed an editor.
Mm-hmm. Knights and fairy tales.
Ooh. Okay, so all that said, and since we're in the spoiler section anyway, and since by the time this is released, Season 4, Episode 1 will be out. Battlestar Galactica.
Battlestar Galactica.
You just finished Season 3.
I did.
Have you seen Razor yet, though?
No.
Okay. Because you're coming over here. We've got some folks coming over Friday night. Mm-hmm. So by the time this airs, actually, we'll have already done this. We're having a shindig over here, and we're going to watch Season 4, Episode 1.
Yes, I'm so excited.
Got like 10 people going to be here. It's going to be cool. There will be drinking. There will be show watching.
Potentially podcasting.
Potentially. Julie's giving me the stink eye about it because it's like, I don't even like the show. Whatever.
Well, you know, you didn't check your inbox.
Yes, I did. We're having it here, though.
Okay. I don't care. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Season 3.
Season 3.
The ending. The ending is controversial.
Yes.
I know at least one person who's coming over Friday night despised the last episode.
Really?
Yes.
This will be one of your friends, then.
No.
Mine?
Lucius.
Lucius. Ooh.
Yes. Yes, he did not care for the ending.
Okay. Hold on. I know Luke enjoyed the trial.
Oh, yeah, the trial. The trial was great.
I assume you're talking about the last 10 minutes.
The last episode. The end of the last episode. Yes.
Because the trial, I expected them to drag the trial out to the end of the episode.
Right.
And then like, do the whole, and the verdict is, and then to be continued next season.
No.
No. But, yeah. I'm going to go ahead and say Battlestar Galactica does one thing, and they do it one thing damn well. Season enders.
Oh.
The season ender for season 1 was fantastic.
Yeah.
That was the Pegasus Adama.
That's Captain Big Balls getting shot.
Oh, yeah.
That's Adama getting laid out.
Adama getting shot. Fantastic. Edge of the seat.
Yep.
Edge of the friggin' seat.
Yep.
Season 2 was the Pegasus. The Pegasus Galactica standoff, where the Vipers are just heading towards.
No,
what?
That's season 2.5.
Oh, was it?
Yes, that's season 2.5.
Yeah, right.
Season 2 is the jump ahead 1 year.
Right.
Which,
the Cylon invasion.
Which I watched that as it happened.
Yes.
And you want to talk about being completely stunned?
I watched
the last
it happened,
10
too.
Minutes of the you know, it's the last probably what 10 minutes of the episode.
Yes.
And quite often with Battlestar Galactica, I watched it twice. Mm-hmm. I had some buddies at work that, you know, didn't have access to the show at the time.
Right.
I had it within my means to create a copy of it for myself that I could take over to and watch with them.
Mm-hmm.
So I always record it on my DVR, and I'd always watch it again later to zap out the commercials.
Right.
So I always watched it with a half an eye the first time I saw it, just kind of. You know, if something was interesting, I'd rewind it and watch it again. And I'd always watch it again a second time as I'm doing that edit. I'm sitting at the laptop. I'm sitting right here where I'm sitting now, on the laptop, watching the television, behind where you're sitting now. And I'm watching, and I see Baltar look down, look up, and it says 1 year later. I stand up. walk to the edge of the couch, put my hands on the back of the couch, lean over, and I just stand there for the next 10 or 15 minutes, just mouth open. I think there was even a commercial break, mm-hmm. and I didn't do anything. I just stood there going, oh my God.
Yeah, they have mastered it. And even the series the Midway 2.5,
mm-hmm.
with the Galactic and the Pegasus, man, I was on the edge of my freaking seat. I was like, oh, God damn, I gotta wait 2 months for this stupid episode to come out.
And then season 3, they come back, and they advance time even more.
Right.
And they had the webisodes, which were really nice.
Yes,
it was a really nice gap, mm-hmm. really nice
stop
filler.
Gap, yeah.
Come back, and the characters and the webisodes actually made it into the series, which was one of the things I was afraid of.
Right,
they were just going to be throwaway characters. That, you know, we're just going to get some scrubs in here. So maybe a lesser character or two, just to make appease people with the universe.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to mean anything. No.
You're right.
It meant something.
That was beautiful.
It really did matter.
That was beautiful. Okay. Conflict resolution from end of season 3. Big Balls, Adama shows up. The single best is he jumps into orbit, and then the Cylon walks into Colonial One, Adama's back. Commercial break.
Yep.
It's like, oh, hell. Adama is back.
The atmosphere drop
yes.
was phenomenal.
It was incredible.
There was a guy at work who had not seen any of Battlestar Galactica, the revamp, the reimagining. He's like, no. You know, I kind of liked the old series, and I was fond of it.
Yeah, I've heard that
and
a
it's,
lot, too.
And, you know, it's nostalgic, and I, you know, I don't want to... And this, you know, nothing could really live up to that.
Yeah.
I found the clip on YouTube, and I said, just watch this. I said, if this doesn't at least raise an eyebrow, I won't say another word about it. Mm-hmm. Within a week, he was already up to season two.
Yes.
After watching that. Because he... He had his headphones on because we work in an office, and he watched it, and I heard the headphones drop, and he come over, dude.
I know it's so good. It's part. They always advertise that it's the best television on television, and it is. It is.
And for me, it's the best drama on television. It's not even the best. I mean, I don't even qualify it saying it's the best sci-fi drama because you can quantify something like that and pigeonhole it to remove other things
right.
from the running. No. From me, best drama on television.
Yeah, I agree with you.
It's a military drama. It just happens to be set in outer space.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's it.
So, I guess back to your original question.
The
ending of season three.
Three.
I enjoyed the trial immensely.
Okay.
I thought Baltar's lawyer... was
Roma Lamkin is awesome.
Yes. You mean Badger from Firefly.
And he was also in The Bionic Woman.
Yes, he was.
Funny, Roma Lamkin, the character's name, R-O-M-O, Ron Moore, the guy who is the executive producer, creator of the revamp of Battlestar Galactic, that's how they named him. Romo. Oh.
Nice.
Yeah. I listened to the podcast.
Oh, okay.
Ron Moore does it's a phenomenal podcast. Every week, within either the day of or the day after the episode is released, he releases a podcast. And the podcast is basically the DVD commentary for that episode.
That's cool.
Yeah. Free. They're all out there. He started doing it episode like 9 of season 1. You can go out there still today and get all of them.
That's cool.
There's a couple of episodes. There's like writers meetings.
Really?
Yeah. So those are kind of interesting. And he normally releases those after the season's over.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not going to ruin any storyline stuff.
Right.
But it's really nice because like this last one that he did, it was 4 hours. But he released them like a couple a week.
Mm-hmm.
For a couple of weeks. So you got like 4 1-hour podcasts that were really just a writer's meeting. It was 1 4-hour-long writer's meeting. But there was no episodes for like 8 months. So it was nice to have a little something. Right. You know?
Yeah, that's cool.
It's free. It's a podcast. And he does, you know, and he's the sound quality, I mean, not like our sound quality is phenomenal, but... Our sound quality is far and above what he does for that. I mean, he does he's got a little recorder in his house, and he puts the episode on. If you listen really closely, you can hear the episode on in the background. When there's a commercial break, there's a beep, so you know how to sync it up to the commercial breaks. It is worth listening to. If you go to the sci-fi channel, you can get the link for that. Mm-hmm. But
okay. I enjoyed it. I am hesitant to see where they're going with Kara Thrace. Only because I dislike her as a character.
Really?
Yes.
Why do you dislike her?
She is too... There's a concept I dislike in literature, storytelling, whatever. Mm-hmm. That you take a stereotype, and then to prove that you're not the stereotype, you go the complete opposite direction on every... Like, you go overboard to prove that you are not that stereotype. Like, she is not the meek woman... But she has to be like this huge burly man's man to not be that woman. But, like, they do it well with Laura Roslin.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that woman, like, she's got balls, but she's got balls, but she doesn't have to be, like, a man's man to have the balls.
She has mom balls.
Yes.
She does.
Yes, she does.
She is like mom with a rolling pin.
Yes, exactly.
And most of the time, she'll pat you on the head and kiss you on the cheek and send you out to play.
But she has
the rolling pin in her hand, and you know it's there, and it may just clock you.
Yes. So I just dislike her character in general.
I can see that. I mean, I know a lot of people that do. I enjoy her character. Lee
annoys me.
He annoys me. I'm glad that he's out of uniform.
Yes. He looked very weird in the suit.
He looked very weird in the suit, but the character, it seemed to work. I mean, it felt like a very natural progression for the character.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually liked it. Because it took Apollo. There is no Apollo anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They killed one of the characters, more or less, because he's not a pilot anymore.
Well, he was in a Raptor at the end of the...
Yeah, he was, but I mean, I think that was more out of necessity and desperation. He really wasn't in that role anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The reveal of the four Cylons.
Oh man, I have said.
And I know one of the problems that Luke has with this is the music.
Yes.
All along the Watchtower.
Yes. Like I didn't. I'm not that huge of a Doors fan.
Hendrix.
All right, whatever.
Hendrix.
I didn't even notice from the melody what it was until the end, and it's not even what they go through the first four lines. And Colonel Tyskin he's like, there must be some way out of here. And I'm like, okay, sure. And then until we get to the Joker and the Flea, I was like, oh, seriously?
The Joker and the Thief.
Well, whatever. Apparently I can't even hear
you. Yeah. See, for me, and I've been watching it, and I've watched most of the episodes twice, as I attested to earlier. One of the things that I picked up on, and one of the things Ron Moore brings back up thematically a lot in the podcast is this all happened before, and this will all happen again.
Right.
At one point, the season ender for season one, when they're on the planet, and they're in the Temple of Athena, and they walk in, he said at one point, there was actually a draft of the script said, they walk in, standing there is Dirk Benedict.
Who's Dirk Benedict?
Starbuck from the original series. Oh. Turns around to us, says, "Hi, you may know me. I'm God."
Nice.
Just because it's just so random.
That's
but
hilarious.
The theme of this has all happened before, this will all happen again. There are episodes of the original series and of the new series that are direct parallels. That the same stuff happens. Not to all the same characters, not all the same way, but the same stuff happens. The Cylons from the original series are the Cylons from the first Cylon War.
Right.
In this series. But what happened as far as the destruction of Caprica happened in the first series and in the series the same way. Slightly different, but I mean it was more or less the same as far as getting destroyed. So it's almost like they don't deny the existence of the first one.
Right, but they don't... They kind of don't even go... I guess they don't kind of mess with it. Like, they don't bring it up too much.
They don't bring it up too much. They don't... But they don't deny it. In fact, like, in the miniseries, and they actually touched on it, I think, one or two more times, the music, like, the pomp and circumstance music that they were playing during the miniseries was the music from the original series.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they do tie them together. So, for me, I didn't really have a problem with them playing, you know, our music, you know, Earth human music for...
It depends on where they go with it, I think.
Yeah.
If they go somewhere stupid with it, then I'm going to be irritated. But
it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see. Okay, so we've got the four Cylons have been revealed.
Oh, man, Colonel Ty. Come on.
That was freaking awesome. That was great. It's been a while since I've seen this. So it was Ty. Tyrell.
The president's aide chick. I don't know her name.
Yeah.
And then Anders.
Was it Anders?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I guess it was. Okay, so there's a fifth Cylon.
Yes.
Any speculation on the fifth Cylon?
Well, you obviously only got three choices.
Really?
It's obviously going to be, and this is, I think it is only limited to one of three choices.
Okay.
It will either be Adama,
mm-hmm.
Laura Rosalind,
mm-hmm.
or Gaius Baltar.
Interesting.
There is an image out on the internet. Have you seen the Last Supper picture?
No.
There's the Last Supper picture where all the characters are standing around in it.
Uh-huh.
It's awesome because, like, Adama's sitting at one end of the table and Laura Rosalind sitting at the other. And then Baltar's kind of in the middle, almost around where Judas sits. It's awesome.
Who's in the position of Christ?
No one.
Really?
Empty. Yes. There's just a big hole where it is.
Oh.
It's awesome.
Interesting. What did you think of the last image? Earth. I thought it was great. I liked it because it showed that we're coming to the end.
Yes. I don't like the Starbuck thing. Beyond my dislike for the character,
uh-huh.
It's like, is it better not be one of those old time things where, like, we see the car go over the cliff,
uh-huh.
and then the car explodes, but then, like,
right.
they retcon it so the guy jumps out at the last second, but they showed you something, like, they lied to you. I don't want them to lie to me.
You haven't seen Razor yet?
No.
I highly recommend you see Razor.
Before Friday?
I don't know. Having not seen this, I can't speak to that.
I will attempt to see it before then.
Razor as a whole has a different feel to it.
Mm-hmm. Because it's about the Pegasus, isn't it?
It's about the Pegasus, but it's told... there's a little bit of modern, of current time.
Mm-hmm.
Then a lot of it goes back to the Pegasus shortly after the attack on Caprica,
mm-hmm.
and what they did to survive, and how they went about surviving after that. Then it also kind of meshes in with the time when both the Pegasus and the Galactica, with Kane and Adama in control of them,
mm-hmm.
existed together as the new fleet. The ending of it speaks to the end of season 3.
Okay.
But it does it in such a way that it doesn't cheat. Because I can't say anymore.
All right.
I would spoil it for you.
I'll watch it before.
It would spoil it for you. It is worth seeing. I understand that the DVD version
mm-hmm.
Is uncut, so there's some scenes that I saw the TV edit, and apparently there's a couple scenes of that are a little more violent, that are a little more brutal on the DVD, and apparently it works better that way than it did on TV.
Okay.
Just because there's a couple of scenes that should have been a little more brutal. It mm-hmm. should have been a little more in your face. That apparently they are that way on the DVD. So I'm curious about that. But the ending speaks to the end of season 3. Mm.
Alright.
The fifth Cylon. I'd been saying for a while, though what I've heard recently is Ron Moore says that about halfway through season 4, we find out who the fifth Cylon is.
That doesn't surprise me.
I always thought the fifth Cylon was humanity. Earth. I thought it would be really cool if they get to Earth and it's all one person.
Really?
It's all the fifth Cylon.
Hmm.
Just something completely different.
Interesting.
It's bizarre. Yes. It's a really bizarre ending. It's something
is a very bizarre ending.
Kind of unexpected, which I kind of expect something different from this series.
keeping with the whole it's all happened before, it all happens again, if Baltar ends up being the fifth Cylon, but, that would not surprise me.
But Baltar wasn't a Cylon. Baltar was with the Cylons. He worked with the Cylons. He worked with the Imperius leader.
Yes, but the final five are regarded as their, I don't know.
They're different. They're different. They're a different breed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say.
I know.
It's hard to say.
I want it to be 2 days from now.
Yeah. Yeah, so do I. All right, so we've gone on long again.
Okay.
A couple long episodes. Let's go ahead and wrap this this up. The next movie we're going to talk about, continuing on with our 2007 Oscars.
Except for The Mist. Not 2007 Oscar worthy.
No. And maybe a Razzie. No, it's, you know, we've been panning. It's not that bad. It's really not Razzie worthy. Not like Sound of Thunder. That movie was bad. Say the next one. Juno. We're going to see Juno. I've seen it, actually.
And I'm going to see it then.
You're going to see it. So, that said, if we're heading on this trend, it's probably safe to assume that
Atonement
and There Will Be Blood will be coming up here very, very soon. We're going to have some other things in the next couple of weeks, though, that are going to mix this up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a special treat coming. Was it in about 3 weeks?
Yes.
I think it is. Something like that.
I probably know what you're talking
about. Who knows?
But I'm tired. So.
Yeah. So we've got that coming up. And if we record something on Friday night, I'll venture to say we'll release that as a special episode.
Yeah.
Let's just throw it out there as a special one, something different. That way we don't have to commit to any kind of format, any kind of timeline.
Mm-hmm.
Odds are we are going to be spoilery and probably a little bit drunk.
Yes.
Both are highly likely. So next week, Juno?
Yep. Fools! Juno is not released for another 2 weeks! Instead, you will be reviewing Escape from New York.
Keep your eye out for the contest page.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be giving away copies again of The Mist and... what is the name of that movie?
Highlander.
Automaton Transfusion. It's such a weird name.
Yes.
It's...
I know, because I was talking to someone about
it. Is it transcript automation. Or... Yeah, automation. No,
it's automation. I'm like, no, it's automaton. No, you're wrong. And I'm like, dude, you got to go read it. I'm sorry.
It is automaton. I remember automaton, but I think it's transfusion. Automaton transition actually sounds better to me, but
yeah.
I don't know. Whatever. Okay, it's getting late.
Yes.
We're getting punchy. See you next week.
See ya.
Yeah, so we're dumbasses. Juno doesn't get released until April 15th. We're recording on April 9th. It's not going to happen. Next episode, Escape from New York.